ATL Echo presents. An Auror, a Professor, and a Potioneer walk into a bar. By Like Light in Glass. An Auror, a Professor, and a Potioneer are celebrating at a pub. There's practiced ease to the way the three of them are sitting at their regular table, shoved into the corner of the Three Broomsticks. The Auror is laughing at her own joke, body tilted towards the other two, and head close as if sharing a secret. The professor has one leg twisted around the potioneer's underneath the table, and the other propped up against the Auror's chair. The potioneer is trying hard not to smile at them both, and he's not succeeding.
"Wait, wait, I've got another one,"
Tonks says, with barely contained laughter.
"An Auror, a professor, and a potioneer walk into a bar."
"Sounds painful," Severus says,
dry and measured as ever despite the free flow of drinks that evening. Harry laughs immediately. Tonks takes a second to reroute her train of thought, and then laughs too.
Oh, I've got an even better punchline for that one then," she says. So they walk into a bar, smack right in the head all three. And this other bloke walking past says, "What's wrong? Didn't you see it there?" And the potions master, the Auror, and the professor all say, "No, we've been so busy, we haven't had a decent night's sleep all week."
Severus snorts. "That isn't funny. But it is true."
"Not anymore, at least," Harry says. "Not only is it finally the last day of term, but Dora's endless case is over with." "And you," Harry says, emphasizing the word with a prod of his foot, "you are going to send out a lot of so sorry for the delay owls, because we're not letting you work at all for at least 3 days, at least."
Severus raises an eyebrow. "So we can all catch up on our sleep, can we?"
"Well, we'll have to rest between rounds, for sure. But you're not leaving our bed all weekend,"
Tonks says definitively, twines her fingers with his, and then presses a quick kiss to the back of his hands. Harry eyes them both, tipsy enough that he can't keep his eagerness at bay, even if he wanted to. So he downs the rest of his drink, throws some galleons on the table, and says,
"So what the hell are we waiting for, then?"
Tonks grins. Severus allows himself to be pulled by both hands, and is dragged outside so they can all apparate home with a quickness. A fighter, a chosen one, and a spy somehow make it through the war. The fighter is caught with a curse that burns up her side and down her left arm and leg. She pivots just in time to fire off a responding hex that takes down two Death Eaters before crumbling down lifeless against the castle wall. The spy has his throat torn into by a madman's pet snake, and bleeds out in a lonely shack. The chosen one walks into the forest and takes a killing curse to the chest, his life freely given. None of them stay dead for long. The first time Harry finds himself in between Severus and Dora, it's in the hospital wing at Hogwarts. It's the middle of the night, and he can't sleep. Since he can't sleep, he tries to find solace in watching the still-sleeping forms before him. Snape is lying unconscious, his neck wreathed with bandages, and they don't know if he's ever going to wake up. Tonks is lying unconscious in the bed beside his, half her body covered in curse burns, and they don't know if she'll wake up either. Tonks has had so many cards and flowers and gifts beside her that Pomfrey had to move some of the overflow to Snape's bedside table. There was plenty of room there, after all. It's dim and it's quiet tonight, and Harry pulls a seat up between the beds, where there's just enough space for a chair, and looks back and forth between the two. Tonks's left side is covered in bandages, but her right hand lies palm up towards the edge of the bed, and without thinking, Harry takes it in his, holds it. He feels uneven suddenly, and though Snape's left arm is stiff and straight and palm down close beside him, Harry reaches over. He folds his fingers around his as well, pulls it a little further towards himself. He compares the sizes, the shapes, the difference in the dusting of hair, and is surprised that he enjoys the feeling of both. It feels right, sitting between them, watching them sleep and holding both of their hands. Why wouldn't he take both their chilly hands in his warm ones? He does have two, after all. A half-blood, a half-blood, and a half-blood
have more in common than they originally think. Two of them aren't allowed to leave their beds, and the third won't be dragged away by wild horses, so they spend a lot of time together. Severus can't speak at first, while his voice box is regrown from scratch, so he can't tell anyone to get out or leave him alone. He does try to write it down once, but Harry and Tonks both choose to be willfully illiterate, so it doesn't do him much good. It turns out that they've all seen some of the same Muggle films, and they all have very strong opinions on the similarities and differences of Muggle and magical sweets, and they all know at least one Muggle playing card game that they're willing to teach the other two. Once Severus and Tonks can both sit up a little more comfortably and don't immediately fall back to sleep after their doses of potions quite so often, Harry sets up a small table and pushes it between their beds, takes his regular seat in the aisle facing them. They play Cluedo and Scrabble and Gin Rummy. Since Harry's pants at chess, when Tonks and Severus want a game of that, he moves the pieces for them while offering unsolicited commentary and terrible advice. Chit-chat grows into a comfortable camaraderie. Severus is funny when he's being mean about people who aren't them, and Harry and Tonks keep sharing looks and smirking when he regales them with tales of working with the endless stream of incompetent DADA professors. Sometimes Severus and Harry butt heads and fall back into old vitriol, but Tonks is good at smoothing out blunt edges and insisting everyone show a little more respect to each other. Severus and Tonks had rarely interacted outside of potions class and order reports before, but Harry is so interested in them both that he keeps them talking, to him and to each other. It's Harry who remembers little details and keeps pointing out connections between the three, the ways they might be different, but the ways they're the same, too. He's the first to notice what the others haven't yet, the way three can sometimes fit together even better than two. Severus asks Tonks one day about Remus.
"We've yet to be graced with the werewolf's presence," he rasps one day, looking up at Tonks and then back at the cards in his hand.
His voice is finally healed enough to talk without any pain, and he's more excited about being able to insult people again than anything else.
"Last I heard, Remus was moving to Spain," Tonks hums.
It's her turn, and she always takes twice as long deliberating than the other two combined. She wiggles one card out of her hand a half inch, before pushing it back down.
"Portugal," Harry corrects. "He wrote me a letter last week."
Severus shifts his eyes between the two of them. Subtlety is lost on these two anyway, so he decides he might as well be straightforward.
"I was led to believe you two were paramours."
Tonks scoffs. "Maybe for a minute. It didn't take." She shrugs, as if barely affected. "I wish him the best in sunny Portugal." Severus tries not to be too obvious about his satisfaction with the knowledge.
"He was too old for you anyway," he declares,
partly because it's true, but mostly because he's very interested in her response. Tonks snorts.
13 years, hardly insurmountable.
For a reason that is not immediately clear to anyone present, she adds.
"Same as you and me. And you and Harry are 20 years apart."
"I am old enough to be Harry's father,"
Severus says. He glances over at Harry, but does not quite meet his eye, and becomes very interested in rearranging the cards in his hand.
"But you aren't," Harry says in a rush. "None of us are related at all, not even cousins,"
he adds, starting to ramble.
"And 7 years, or 13 years, or 20 years is nothing, considering how long wizards live."
"Quite right," Tonks agrees. She looks up at Snape.
"And we should be so lucky, snatching up a pretty young thing like Harry."
She shoots Harry a wink, and Harry ducks his head and blushes. Severus, for once, appears to have no comment. The conversation dies off. The game ends, and it's late. They don't bring it up again, and bid each other good night. But after all is said and done, when Harry thinks a few years afterwards about how things started, he decides that that's the moment when the notion was first entertained. A Hufflepuff, a Gryffindor, and a Slytherin tumble into bed together. The Gryffindor jumps in head first, as Gryffindors do, all lips and tongue and hands, tries to touch everyone, everywhere, all at once. He's young and new and excited to be there. The Hufflepuff is the most concerned with connection. It's hard to split things three ways with no one feeling left out, But she's not afraid of a little hard work, and finds the greatest pleasure is in making sure the pleasure is spread out equally. The Slytherin knows better than to question how he could end up here, between a handsome young man and a beautiful young woman, doesn't trust his tongue not to utter a word that will break this spell he's inadvertently put them under. So he's cautious as a serpent, and keeps his mouth shut. Tonks is glad that of all the combinations that could have happened, she's the one who walks in on Severus and Harry kissing each other. If it had been Harry, she thinks, there may still have been a chance of ending up in the same way, because at least he'd try to make an attempt at staying friends, even if he thought she and Sev wanted to go off and couple up. But if it had been Severus, they all knew he'd have disappeared into the night, convinced Harry and Tonks had no need nor want of him, and gone off to lick his wounds alone. After Tonks and Severus were declared well enough to leave the hospital wing, the three of them could have parted ways. Severus had a house of his own, and Tonks had a flat, and Harry had a crumbling mausoleum, but none of them wanted to go back to theirs alone. So Harry tosses out a lifeline and offers up Grimmauld as a sort of headquarters again. He practically begs for help finishing the endless work of stripping the House of Dark Magic, and wouldn't they please come and help him? It takes very little prodding for them to agree, and the three are moved in together by the end of the next day. As it happened, Tonks had been in just the right place at just the right time, the tail end of an intense conversation spilling over into a heated kiss. Harry had Severus up against the wall, but Severus was clinging on to Harry like his life depended on it, returning the kiss so forcefully, Tonks worried he might break his nose. There had been something building between the three of them in the past few weeks, ever since they'd left Hogwarts, and it looks like the slow simmer had finally tipped over into a boil. She didn't think for a moment about walking away. Those were her boys. She was drawn like a magnet to the force of passion exuding from the two men. It was the most natural thing in the world to walk towards them instead of slinking away and ask, "Mind if I join in?" They parted at her appearance, and before either of them could react, she kissed first Severus's shocked face, and then Harry's amazed one, giggled with joy, and dragged them with her into the nearest bedroom. A war hero, and a war hero. Make the gossip column of the Daily Prophet several weeks in a row, as the wizarding world attempts to untangle their relationship. They say that one of them is simply indecisive, never able to settle on one thing. They say that one of them is young and confused, had too much burden on him at too young an age, and has been taken in. They also say that one of them is a lecherous opportunist, and that's only if they're being particularly polite. Severus knows what people think when they see the three of them together. They see two of Hogwarts' fine alums and their disgraced former professor. They see a matching set of young and beautiful, and the old man horning in. They see a proper pair and an interloper. But when he's home with them, it doesn't feel like that at all. He's a puzzle piece fit into the other two. Her heart-shaped face tucks against his chest, as effortlessly as Harry's arm encircles his shoulders. He'd pointed out to each of them, both separately and together, how mad they both are. He was hoping to knock some sense into them both, that maybe it wouldn't hurt so much if they saw the error of their ways early on and kicked him to the curb before he'd got too attached. But whenever he rages against them, it's met with serenity, and his carefully constructed logic is dismissed out of hand. Even the trite and tame description of them as an odd couple doesn't bear any weight. "We're not a couple," Harry says without even looking up from the Quidditch scores. "There's three of us." "And you thought the boy couldn't count," Tonks responds just as easily. She's trying to crochet something, and she's spread out across the sofa, covered in yarn as bright pink as her hair, her soft feet in Harry's lap. Severus just scowls and paces around the kitchen some more, angry that no one will fight with him and fulfill his self-made prophecies. He's annoyed with himself, too, because he doesn't particularly enjoy sneering and crossing his arms and swooping around like a bat while his two lovers sit in simple, quiet domesticity a few feet away from him, waiting him out until he gives in and burrows into the space between them. Severus never thought his shriveled black heart had any space in it for even loving one person properly, let alone two. But as he stands there that night, on an ordinary Tuesday evening, taking in the way firelight dances across the freckles dusting Tonks's face, and the way the neckline of Severus's ratty old tee dips low enough to show off Harry's clavicle. His heart finally cracks, breaking open so wide he knows it can never shut again. He stands there a moment longer, silently taking in this monumental truth. But before he can fret about it too much, Harry says, "Can you bring us some tea on your way over here, love?" And Tonks adds, "And a few of those jammy dodges." So he does, and he sets down mugs and biscuits. And when he gets to the sofa, Tonks lifts her leg so he can slide into the middle. Harry pulls his head into his lap, and Tonks pulls his legs onto hers, and he vows never to let anyone take them away from him, not even himself. A freak, a freak, and a freak are accustomed to being different. One has been othered for her changeling body, one for his abnormal nature, and one for his ragged soul. Tonks knows that they're both something different when they don't want her to change herself at all during sex. It's not because they're freaked out by her metamorph magus talents. She's seen that before, and neither of them have that hesitant, unnerved look about them when she shifts forms as easily as changing clothes. But they're in bed one night, and she asks if there's anything they'd like to see, and it's striking how vehemently they both refuse. She's bewildered at first. It's not like it would hurt her feelings if a bloke fancies a go with a blue-eyed blonde or wants to cup a larger pair of breasts every once in a while. It's always her, anyway. It's not like she'd let them forget who it is that's sharing their bed, no matter how she looks at any given moment. But the way they react to the questions, how they both lay her down, kiss every blemish and freckle and scar, makes her feel seen and known and cherished like she never has before. They both love her so much, just as she is. Harry doesn't really notice the cracks in him that his childhood had left behind until he's all grown up. Severus and Dora don't ever make fun of him for making such a big deal about holidays, even though he thinks it must come off as childish. They don't question why he shies away from small spaces without explaining why. And they never fault him for demanding touch and affection from them both as often as he thinks they'll allow it. They don't run away from him when he bursts into frustrated anger, when he thinks he's not being listened to or not being understood. He hates, most of all, to be ignored or left out of things, but Sev and Dora always want him around. He comes home one night, and Tonks and Severus are snogging in their large wingback, nice and leisurely. She is sitting on the arm of the chair, draped over him, and his eyes are closed. His head is pulled back by his hair as she dips her mouth down to lap at the scar encircling his neck, and Harry can see her hand drifting lazily over the bulge in Severus's trousers, teasing him. He has just enough time to feel the beginning tingles of the creeping itch of jealousy before Severus opens his eyes. His whole face lights up with happiness as soon as he sees him, and Dora registers the shift in attention. She turns toward him, already grinning wide. "Just who we were getting ready for," she says, low and sultry, and she's reaching out her hand, beckoning him over. He finds himself pulled in like a magnet, and those feelings of fear, of being cast aside, evaporate into thin air. Because Severus's hands are in Harry's hair, he's kissing him deep, and Dora is nipping his ear, telling him how happy they are he's finally home, that they're all together, just how it should be. And Harry is held tight and kissed hard and blanketed by so much love he could drown in it. Severus had always been a bit too weird, a bit too dark for everyone else's comfort. For his parents, first. Too otherworldly for his muggle father, too uncouth and common for his magical mother. He was already known as obsessed with dark arts before he actually decided to become so, and once his bad choices started to stack on top of each other until he was crushed beneath the weight of them, his reputation preceded him. He tells himself that Dora and Harry are too bright for him, that his black moods and black heart and shredded soul will swallow them both up. But they tell him they aren't afraid of dark things. Harry tells him he used to make friends with the spiders in his cupboard, and Dora says, "Don't you remember how much I loved the slimiest and creepiest ingredients in class?" And while he doesn't quite appreciate the insinuation that he is alluring to them in the way a spider or a flobberworm is, He does like the gesture. He likes how both their pretty faces look when one of his dry, rotten jokes or cutting insults shock them, affronted gasps giving way to uncontrollable laughter. He likes how Harry defends his honor to anyone who will listen, and to quite a few people who won't. He likes how Dora still plays with his hair, even when he's forgotten to wash it, and how warm her fingertips feel when they trace over his mark. He likes, most of all, that each of them knows what it's like to be the odd one, so they never make each other feel like the odd one out. They can all be strange together. A metamorph magus, a seeker, and a double agent know how to adapt. The metamorph magus gets a promotion at work, and while she's certainly used to people caring about her, she's not used to facing the united front of two stubborn gits layering her in protection spells every day like she's a particularly delicate vase. It ruffles her at first, and then she reminds herself it's because they love her. And although it annoys her, she adapts herself to being part of a family now. And though she loves her work, she takes it under advisement that there's people waiting at home for her now. The Seeker knows the key to catching the snitch isn't speed, it's agility. It's about knowing when to change course. It's about picking out that glimmer and following it wherever it leads you. And once he commits to Severus and Dora, he commits. He doesn't care if he has to suddenly learn how to read the moods and needs and wants of three people, including himself. If he has to learn about compromise and communication and flexibility, a good life with his lovers is gleaming gold, and he will chase it this way and that for the next 100 years. The double agent has proven himself indispensable to two opposing forces before, but it takes a while to shift that mental dynamic to one where everyone is actually on the same side. He's so naturally inclined to play one side against the other that it causes them a few problems in the beginning, while they learn to grow together. He's so used to having to hide parts of himself, so good at keeping track of whom he's lying to and about what, that it's hard to remember he doesn't have to lie to anyone anymore. What they've done to him, the double agent thinks wryly, made an honest man out of a spy. A middle spoon, and a middle spoon are tangled and sweaty and piled up in bed after their celebratory evening. They had to buy the largest bed they could find, not only to accommodate the size of three adults, but to account for the constant shifting and sliding and rearranging as they all unconsciously fought for the middle. Harry flews to Hogwarts every day for work, and rarely needs to use his quarters there to sleep in. But if he's got overnight duties there, and it so happens to be a night that Dora is also out working, Severus doesn't bother sleeping at all. He's not used to sleeping alone anymore, and while the bed feels too large with only two, it is an endless expanse for only one. Harry mutters something sleepily into Severus's chest. "Hmm," he answers, eyes closed, his large nose pressed into Dora's purple curls. "The joke," Harry says louder. "What was the rest of the joke, Dora? About the professor and the aura and the potioneer?" "Do you think I can drink like this and remember a punchline?" she quips. She rolls over, puts her arm around Harry, her breasts pressed against his back. Severus shifts slightly, pulls the blanket up around them. "An aura, a professor, and a potioneer walk into a bar." They wait a few moments while she draws out the delivery. And the bartender looks up and says, "What is this? Some kind of a joke?" It's silent for a second before they both groan, and she laughs wildly. "That was horrible," Harry says. "Why do we even keep you around?" "Because I give the best head," she replies confidently, and Severus chokes on air.
"An aura, a professor, and a potioneer all go to sleep," Severus insists, curling around them and snuggling further under the covers.
"An aura, a professor, and a potioneer fall madly in love," Harry says dreamily, pressing a kiss to whoever's bit of skin is nearest his mouth at the moment. "No punchline. They just are." Dora cuddles closer in, kisses a cheek and then a forehead, before closing her eyes and settling in to sleep. "An aura, a professor, and a potioneer live happily ever after," she says. ETL Echo,
echoing tales for everyone to love.